Chapter 12. Park. When Park got on the bus, he'd set the comics and Smith's tape on the seat next to him, so they'd just be waiting for her, so he wouldn't have to say anything. When she got on the bus a few minutes later, Park could tell that something was wrong. She got on like she was lost and ended up there. She was wearing the same thing she'd worn yesterday, which wasn't that weird. She was always wearing a different version of the same thing. But today was different. Her neck and wrists were bare, and her hair was a mess, a pile, an all-over glob of red curls. She stopped at their seat and looked down at the pile of stuff he'd left for her. Where were his school books? Then she picked everything up, careful as ever, and sat down. Park wanted to look at her face, but he couldn't. He stared at her wrists instead. She picked up the cassette. He'd written, "How soon is now?" and more on the thin white sticker. She held it out to him. "Thank you," she said.
Now, that was something he'd never heard her say before.
"But I can't."
He didn't take it.
"It's for you. Take it,"
he whispered. He looked up from her hands to her dropped chin.
"No," she said. "I mean, thank you, but I can't."
She tried again to give him the tape, but he still wouldn't take it.
Why did she have to make every little thing so hard? "I don't want it," he said.
She clenched her teeth and glared. She really must hate him.
"No,"
she said, practically loud enough for other people to hear.
"I mean, I can't. I don't have any way to listen to it. God, just take it back."
He took it. She covered her face. The kid in the seat across from them, a twerpy senior who was actually named Junior, was watching. Park frowned at Junior until he turned away. Then Park turned back to the girl. He took his Walkman out of the pocket of his trench coat and popped out his dead Kennedy's tape. He slid the new tape in, pressed play, then, carefully, put the headphones over her hair. He was so careful, he didn't even touch her. He could hear the swampy guitar start and then the first line of the song, "I am the sun and the air." She lifted her head a little but didn't look at him. She didn't move her hands away from her face. When they got to school, she took the headphones off and gave them back to him. They got off the bus together and stayed together, which was weird. Usually they broke away from each other as soon as they hit the sidewalk. That's what seemed weird now, Park thought. They walked the same way every day. Her locker was just down the hall from his. How had they managed to go their separate ways every morning? Park stopped for a minute when they got to her locker. He didn't step close to her, but he stopped. She stopped too. "Well," he said, looking down the hall, "now you've heard the Smiths." And she... Eleanor laughed.
"Eleanor, she should have just taken the tape. She didn't need to be telling everybody what she had and didn't have. She didn't need to be telling weird Asian kids anything. Weird Asian kid. She was pretty sure he was Asian. It was hard to tell. He had green eyes and skin the color of sunshine through honey. Maybe he was Filipino. Was that in Asia? Probably. Asia's out of control huge. Eleanor had only known one Asian person in her life, Paul, who was in her math class at her old school. Paul was Chinese. His parents had moved to Omaha to get away from the Chinese government, which seemed like an extreme choice, like they'd looked at the globe and said, yep, that's as far away as possible. Paul was the one who'd taught Eleanor to say Asian and not Oriental. Orientals for food, he'd said. Whatever, La Choy boy, she'd said back. Eleanor couldn't figure out what an Asian person was doing in the flats anyway. Everybody else here was seriously white, like white by choice. Eleanor had never even heard the N-word said out loud until she moved here, but the kids on her bus used it like it was the only way to indicate that somebody was black, like there was no other word or phrase that would work. Eleanor stayed away from the N-word, even in her head. It was bad enough that, thanks to Richie's influence, she went around mentally calling everyone she met a motherfucker. Irony. There were three or four other Asian kids at their school, cousins. One of them had written an essay about being a refugee from Laos. And then there was old Green Eyes, whom she was apparently going to tell her whole life story to. Maybe on the way home she'd tell him that she didn't have a phone, or a washing machine, or a toothbrush. That last thing she was thinking about telling her counselor. Mrs. Dunn had sat Eleanor down on her first day of school and given a little speech about how Eleanor could tell her anything. All through the speech, she kept squeezing the fattest part of Eleanor's arm. If Eleanor told Mrs. Dunn everything, about Richie, her mom, everything, Eleanor didn't know what would happen. But if she told Mrs. Dunn about the toothbrush, maybe Mrs. Dunn would just get her one. And then Eleanor could stop sneaking into the bathroom after lunch to rub her teeth with salt. She'd seen that in a Western once. It probably didn't even work. The bell rang. 10:12. Just two more periods until English. She wondered if he'd talk to her in class. Maybe that's what they did now. She could still hear that voice in her head. Not his, the singer's, from the Smiths. You could hear his accent, even when he was singing. He sounded like he was crying out. I am the sun and the air. Eleanor didn't notice at first how unhorrible everyone was being in gym. Her head was still on the bus. They were playing volleyball today, and once Tina said, "You're served, bitch," but that was it, and that was practically jocular, all things Tina considered. When Eleanor got to the locker room, she realized why Tina had been so low-key. She was just waiting. Tina and her friends, and the black girls too, everybody wanted a piece of this, were standing at the end of Eleanor's row, waiting for her to walk to her locker. It was covered with Kotex pads. A whole box, it looked like. At first, Eleanor thought the pads were actually bloody, but when she got closer, she could see that it was just red magic marker. Somebody had written Raghead and Big Red on a few of the pads, but they were the expensive kind, so the ink was already starting to absorb. If Eleanor's clothes weren't in that locker, if she were wearing anything other than this gym suit, she would have just walked away. Instead, she walked past the girls with her chin as high as she could manage and methodically peeled the pads off her locker. There were even some inside, stuck to her clothes. Eleanor cried a little bit. She couldn't help it. But she kept her back to everybody so there wouldn't be a show. It was all over in a few minutes anyway, because nobody wanted to be late to lunch. Most of the girls still had to change and redo their hair. After everyone else walked away, two black girls stayed. They walked over to Eleanor and started pulling pads off the wall. "Ain't no thing," one of the girls whispered, crumpling a pad into a ball. Her name was Denise, and she looked too young to be in the 10th grade. She was small, and she wore her hair in two braided pigtails. Eleanor shook her head, but didn't say anything. "Those girls are trifling," Denise said. "They're so insignificant, God can hardly see them." "Mm-hmm," the other girl agreed. Eleanor was pretty sure her name was Bibi. Bibi was what Eleanor's mom would call a big girl. Much bigger than Eleanor. Bibi's gym suit was even a different color from everybody else's, like they'd had to special order it for her, which made Eleanor feel bad about feeling so bad about her own body, and which also made her wonder why she was the official fat girl in the class. They threw the pads in the trash and pushed them under some wet paper towels so that nobody would find them. If Denise and Bibi wouldn't have been standing there, Eleanor might have kept some of the pads, the ones that didn't have any writing on them, because, God, what a waste. She was late to lunch, then late to English, and if she didn't know already that she liked that stupid effing Asian kid, she knew it now. Because even after everything that had happened in the last 45 minutes, and everything that had happened in the last 24 hours, all Eleanor could think about was seeing Park.
Park. When they got back on the bus, she took his Walkman without arguing, and without making him put it on for her. Had to stop before hers, she handed it back.
You can borrow it, he said quietly. Listen to the rest of the tape. I don't want to break it, she said.
You're not going to break it.
I don't want to use up the batteries. I don't care about the batteries.
She looked up at him then, in the eye, maybe for the first time ever. Her hair looked even crazier than it had this morning, more frizzy than curly, like she was working on a big red afro. But her eyes were dead serious, cold sober. Any cliche you've ever heard used to describe Clint Eastwood, those were Eleanor's eyes.
Really, she said. You don't care.
They're just batteries, he said. She emptied the batteries and the tape from Park's Walkman, handed it back to him, then got off the bus without looking back.
God, she was weird.
Eleanor. The batteries started to die at 1 a.m., but Eleanor kept listening for another hour until the voices slowed to a stop. Chapter 13. Eleanor. She remembered her books today, and she was wearing fresh clothes. She'd had to wash her jeans out in the bathtub last night, so they were still kind of damp. But altogether, Eleanor felt 1,000 times better than she had yesterday. Even her hair was halfway cooperating. She'd clumped it up into a bun and wrapped it with a rubber band. It was going to hurt like crazy trying to tear the rubber band out, but at least it was staying for now. Best of all, she had Park's songs in her head, and in her chest, somehow. There was something about the music on that tape. It felt different, like it set her lungs and her stomach on edge. There was something exciting about it, and something nervous. It made Eleanor feel like everything, like the world, wasn't what she'd thought it was. And that was a good thing. That was the greatest thing. When she got on the bus that morning, she immediately lifted her head to find Park. He was looking up, too, like he was waiting for her. She couldn't help it. She grinned, just for a second. As soon as she sat down, Eleanor slunk low in the seat so the back of the bus ruffians wouldn't be able to see from the top of her head how happy she felt. She could feel Park sitting next to her, even though he was at least 6 inches away. She handed him the comics, then tugged nervously at the green ribbon wound round her wrist. She couldn't think of what to say. She started to worry that maybe she wouldn't say anything, that she wouldn't even thank him. Park's hands were perfectly still in his lap, and perfectly perfect, honey-colored, with clean pink fingernails. Everything about him was strong and slender. Every time he moved, he had a reason. They were almost to school when he broke the silence. Did you listen? She nodded, letting her eyes climb as high as his shoulders. Did you like it? He asked. She rolled her eyes. Oh my God, it was just like... She spread out all her fingers. So awesome. Are you being sarcastic? I can't tell. She looked up at his face, even though she knew how that was going to feel, like someone was hooking her insides out through her chest. No, it was awesome. I didn't want to stop listening. That one song, is it Love Will Tear Us Apart? Yeah, Joy Division. Oh my God, that's the best beginning to a song ever. He imitated the guitar and the drums. Yeah, she said. I just wanted to listen to those 3 seconds over and over. You could have. His eyes were smiling, his mouth only sort of. I didn't want to waste the batteries, she said. He shook his head like she was dumb. Plus, she said, I love the rest of it just as much. Like the high part, the melody, the da, 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 da. He nodded. And his voice at the end, she said, when he goes just a little bit too high. And then the very end, where it sounds like the drums are fighting it, like they don't want the song to be over. Park made drum noises with his mouth. Ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch. I just want to break that song into pieces, she said, and love them all to death. That made him laugh. What about the Smiths? He asked. I didn't know who was who, she said. I'll write it down for you. I liked it all. Good, he said. I loved it. He smiled, but turned away to look out the window. She looked down. They were pulling into the parking lot. Eleanor didn't want this new talking thing, like really talking back and forth and smiling at each other, to stop. And, she said quickly, I love the X-Men, but I hate Cyclops. He whipped his head back. You can't hate Cyclops. He's team captain. He's boring. He's worse than Batman. What? You hate Batman? God, so boring. I can't even make myself read it. Whenever you bring Batman, I catch myself listening to Steve or staring out the window, wishing I was in hypersleep. The bus came to a stop. Huh, he said, standing up. He said it really judgmentally. What? Now I know what you're thinking when you stare out the window. No, you don't, she said. I mix it up. Everybody else was pushing down the aisle past them. Eleanor stood up, too. I'm bringing you The Dark Knight Returns, he said. What's that? Only the least boring Batman story ever. The least boring Batman story ever, huh? Does Batman raise both eyebrows? He laughed again. His face completely changed when he laughed. He didn't have dimples, exactly, but the sides of his face folded in on themselves, and his eyes almost disappeared. Just wait, he said.
Park. That morning, in English, Park noticed that Eleanor's hair came to a soft red point on the back of her neck.
Eleanor. That afternoon in history, Eleanor noticed that Park chewed on his pencil when he was thinking. And that the girl sitting behind him, what's her name, Kim, with the giant breasts and the orange esprit bag, obviously had a crush on him.
Park. That night, Park made a tape with the Joy Division song on it, over and over again. He emptied all his handheld video games and Josh's remote control cars and called his grandma to tell her that all he wanted for his birthday in November was AA batteries.
Chapter 14. Eleanor. I know she doesn't think I'm going to jump over that thing, Denise said. Denise and the other girl, the big girl, Bibi, talk to Eleanor now and Jim, because being assaulted with maxi pads is a great way to win friends and influence people. Today in class, their gym teacher, Mrs. Burt, had shown them how to swing over a 1,000-year-old gymnastics horse. She said that next time, everybody had to try. She has got another thing coming, Denise said after class in the locker room. Do I look like Mary Lou Retton? Bibi giggled. Better tell her you didn't eat your Wheaties. Actually, Eleanor thought, Denise did kind of look like a gymnast, with her little girl bangs and braids. She looked way too young to be in high school, and her clothes just made it worse. Puffed sleeve shirts, overalls, matching ponytail balls. She wore her gym suit baggy, like a romper. Eleanor wasn't scared of the horse, but she didn't want to have to run down the mats with the whole class watching her. She didn't want to run, period. It made her breasts feel like they were going to detach from her body. I'm going to tell Mrs. Burt that my mom doesn't want me to do anything that might rupture my hymen, Eleanor said, for religious reasons. For real? Bibi asked. No, Eleanor said, giggling. Well, actually. You're nasty, Denise said, hitching up her overalls. Eleanor put her t-shirt on over her head, then wriggled out of her gym suit, using the shirt as cover. Are you coming? Denise asked. Well, I'm probably not going to start skipping class now just because of gymnastics, Eleanor said, hopping to pull up her jeans. No, are you coming to lunch? Oh, Eleanor said, looking up. They were waiting for her at the end of the lockers. Yeah. Then hurry up, Miss Jackson. She sat with Denise and Bibi at their usual table by the windows. During passing period, Eleanor saw Park walk by.
Park. Why can't you get your driver's license by homecoming? Cal asked. Mr. Stessman had them in small groups. They were supposed to be comparing Juliet to Ophelia. Because I can't bend time and space, Park said. Eleanor was sitting across the room by the windows. She was paired up with a guy named Eric, a basketball player. He was talking, and Eleanor was frowning at him. If you had your car, Cal said, we could ask him. You can ask him, Park said. Eric was one of those tall guys who always walked with his shoulders about a foot behind his hips, constantly doing the limbo, like he was afraid to hit his head on every door jam. She wants to go with the group, Cal said. Plus, I think she likes you. What? I don't want to go to homecoming with Kim. I don't even like her. I mean, you know, you like her. I know. That's why the plan works. We all go to homecoming together. She figures out you don't like her, she's miserable, and guess who's standing right there asking her to slow dance? I don't want to make Kim miserable. It's her or me, man. Eric said something else, and Eleanor frowned again. Then she looked over at Park and stopped frowning. Park smiled. 1 minute, Mr. Stessman said. Crap, Cal said. What have we got? Ophelia was bonkers, right? And Juliet was what, a sixth grader?
Eleanor. So Psylocke is another girl telepath? Uh-huh, Park said. Every morning when Eleanor got on the bus, she worried that Park wouldn't take off his headphones, that he would stop talking to her as suddenly as he'd started. And if that happened, if she got on the bus one day and he didn't look up, she didn't want him to see how devastated it would make her. So far, it hadn't happened. So far, they hadn't stopped talking, like literally. They talked every second they were sitting next to each other. And almost every conversation started with the words, what do you think? What did Eleanor think about that U2 album? She loved it. What did Park think of Miami Vice? He thought it was boring. Yes, they said when they agreed with each other. Back and forth. Yes, 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 I know, exactly, right? They agreed about everything important and argued about everything else. And that was good, too, because whenever they argued, Eleanor could always crack Park up. Why do the X-Men need another girl telepath? She asked. This one has purple hair. It's also sexist. Park's eyes got wide. Well, sort of wide. Sometimes she wondered if the shape of his eyes affected how he saw things. That was probably the most racist question of all time. The X-Men aren't sexist, he said, shaking his head. They're a metaphor for acceptance. They've sworn to protect a world that hates and fears them. Yeah, she said. But there's no but, he said, laughing. But, Eleanor insisted, the girls are also stereotypically girly and passive. Half of them just think really hard. Like that's their superpower, thinking. And Shadowcat's power is even worse. She disappears. She becomes intangible, Park said. That's different. It's still something you could do in the middle of a tea party, Eleanor said. Not if you were holding hot tea. Plus, you're forgetting Storm. I'm not forgetting Storm. She controls the weather with her head. It's still just thinking, which is about all she could do in those boots. She has a cool mohawk, Park said. Irrelevant, Eleanor answered. Park leaned his head back against the seat, smiling, and looked at the ceiling. The X-Men aren't sexist. Are you trying to think of an empowered X-woman? Eleanor asked. How about Dazzler? She's a living disco ball. Or the White Queen? She thinks really hard while wearing spotless white lingerie. What kind of power would you want? he asked, changing the subject. He turned his face toward her, laying his cheek against the top of the seat, still smiling. "I'd want to fly," Eleanor said, looking away from him. "I know it's not very useful, but it's flying." "Yes," he said.
Park.
"Damn, Park, are you going on a ninja mission?"
"Ninjas wear black, Steve."
"What?" Park should have gone inside to change after Taekwondo, but his dad said he had to be back by 9, and that gave him less than an hour to show Eleanor. Steve was outside working on his Camaro. He didn't have his license yet either, but he was getting ready.
"Going to see your girlfriend?" he called to Park.
"What?"
"Sneaking out to see your girlfriend, Bloody Mary?"
"She's not my girlfriend," Park said, then swallowed.
"Sneaking out ninja style," Steve said.
Park shook his head and broke into a run.
Well, she wasn't, he thought to himself, cutting through the alley. He didn't know where Eleanor lived exactly. He knew where she got on the bus, and he knew that she lived next to the school. It must be this one, he thought. He stopped at a small white house. There were a few broken toys in the yard, and a giant Rottweiler was asleep on the porch. Park walked toward the house slowly. The dog lifted its head and watched him for a second, then settled back to sleep. It didn't move, even when Park climbed the steps and knocked on the door. The guy who answered looked too young to be Eleanor's dad. Park was pretty sure he'd seen this guy around the neighborhood before. He didn't know whom he'd expected to come to the door. Somebody more exotic. Somebody more like her. The guy didn't even say anything, just stood at the door and waited.
"Is Eleanor home?" Park asked.
"Who wants to know?"
He had a nose like a knife, and he looked straight down it at Park.
"We go to school together," Park said. The guy looked at Park for another second, then closed the door. Park wasn't sure what to do. He waited for a few minutes, then, right as he was thinking about leaving, Eleanor opened the door just enough to slide through. Her eyes were round with alarm. In the dark like this, it didn't even look like she had irises. As soon as he saw her, he knew it had been a mistake to come here. He felt like he should have known that even sooner. He'd been so caught up in showing her.
"Hey," he said.
"Hi.
I came to challenge me in hand-to-hand combat?"
Park reached into the front of his dobok and pulled out the second issue of Watchmen. Her face lit up. She was so pale, so luminous under the streetlight, that wasn't just an expression.
"Have you read it?" she asked.
He shook his head. "I thought we could... together." Eleanor glanced back at the house, then stepped quickly off the porch. He followed her down the steps, across the gravel driveway, to the back stoop of the elementary school. There was a big safety light over the door. Eleanor sat on the top step, and he sat next to her. It took twice as long to read Watchmen as it did any other comic, and it took even longer tonight because it was so strange to be sitting together somewhere other than on the bus. To even see each other outside of school. Eleanor's hair was wet and hanging in long, dark curls around her face. When they got to the last page, all Park wanted to do was sit and talk about it. All he really wanted to do was sit and talk to Eleanor. But she was already standing up and looking back at her house.
"I've got to go," she said.
"Oh," he said.
"Okay. I guess I do, too."
She left him sitting on the elementary school steps. She was disappearing inside the house before he could think about saying goodbye.
Eleanor. When she walked back into the house, the living room was dark, but the TV was on. Eleanor could see Richie sitting on the couch and her mom standing in the doorway of the kitchen. It was just a few steps to her room.
"Is that your boyfriend?" Richie asked before she made it.
He didn't look up from the TV. "No," she said. "He's just a boy from school."
"What did he want?"
"To talk to me about an assignment." She waited in her bedroom doorway. Then, when Richie didn't say anything more, she stepped inside, shutting the door behind her.
"I know what you're up to," he said, raising his voice just as the door closed. "Nothing but a bitch in heat."
Eleanor let his words hit her full on, took them right in the chin. She climbed into bed and clenched her eyes and jaw and fists, held everything clenched until she could breathe without screaming. Until this moment, she'd kept Park in a place in her head that she thought Richie couldn't get to, completely separate from this house and everything that happened here. It was a pretty awesome place, like the only part of her head fit for praying. But now Richie was in there, just pissing all over everything, making everything she felt feel as rank and rotten as him. Now she couldn't think about Park, about the way he looked in the dark, dressed in white, like a superhero, about the way he smelled, like sweat and bar soap, about the way he smiled when he liked something, with his lips just turned up at the corners, without feeling Richie leer. She kicked the cat out of the bed just to be mean. He squawked, but jumped right back up. "Eleanor," Maisie whispered from the bottom bunk, "was that your boyfriend?" Eleanor crushed her teeth together. "No," she whispered back viciously. "He's just a boy." Chapter 15. Eleanor. Her mother stood in the bedroom the next morning while Eleanor got ready. "Here," she whispered, taking the hairbrush and drawing Eleanor's hair into a ponytail without brushing out the curl. "Eleanor," she said. "I know why you're in here," Eleanor said, pulling away. "I don't want to talk about it." "Just listen." "No, I know. He won't come back, okay? I didn't invite him, but I'll tell him, and he won't come back." "Okay, well, good," her mom said, folding her arms, still whispering. "It's just that you're so young." "No," Eleanor said. "That's not what it is, but it doesn't even matter. He won't come back, okay? It isn't even like that anyway." Her mom left the room. Richie was still in the house. Eleanor ran out the front door when she heard him turn on the bathroom sink. "It's not even like that," she thought as she walked to the bus stop, and thinking it made her want to cry, because she knew it was true. And wanting to cry just made her angry. Because if she was going to cry about something, it was going to be the fact that her life was complete shit, not because some cool, cute guy didn't like her like that. Especially when just being Park's friend was pretty much the best thing that had ever happened to her. She must have looked ticked off when she got on the bus because Park didn't say hi when she sat down. Eleanor looked into the aisle. After a few seconds, he reached over and pulled at the old silk scarf she'd tied around her wrist. "I'm sorry," he said. "For what?" She even sounded angry. God, she was a jerk. "I don't know," he said. "I feel like maybe I got you in trouble last night." He pulled on the scarf again, so she looked at him. She tried not to look mad, but she'd rather look mad than look like she'd spent all night thinking about how beautiful his lips were. "Was that your dad?" he asked. She jerked her head back. "No! No, that was my mother's husband. He's not really my anything. My problem, I guess."
"Did you get in trouble?"
"Sort of." She really didn't want to talk to Park about Richie. She'd just about scraped all the Richie off the Park place in her head.
"I'm sorry," he said again.
"It's okay," she said. "It wasn't your fault. Anyway, thanks for bringing Watchmen. I'm glad I got to read it."
"It was cool, huh?"
"Oh, yeah. Kind of brutal. I mean, that part with the comedian."
"Yeah. Sorry."
"No, I didn't mean that. I mean, I think I need to reread it."
"I read it again twice last night."
You can take it tonight. Yeah? Thanks. He was still holding the end of her scarf, rubbing the silk idly between his thumb and fingers. She watched his hand. If he were to look up at her now, he'd know exactly how stupid she was. She could feel her face go soft and gummy. If Park were to look up at her now, he'd know everything. He didn't look up. He wound the scarf around his fingers until her hand was hanging in the space between them. Then he slid the silk and his fingers into her open palm. And Eleanor disintegrated.
Park. Holding Eleanor's hand was like holding a butterfly or a heartbeat, like holding something complete and completely alive. As soon as he touched her, he wondered how he'd gone this long without doing it. He rubbed his thumb through her palm and up her fingers and was aware of her every breath. Park had held hands with girls before. Girls at Skateland, a girl at the 9th grade dance last year. They'd kissed while they waited for her dad to pick them up. He'd even held Tina's hand back when they went together in the 6th grade. And always before, it had been fine. Not much different from holding Josh's hand when they were little kids crossing the street, or holding his grandma's hand when she took him to church. Maybe a little sweatier, a little more awkward. When he'd kissed that girl last year, with his mouth dry and his eyes mostly open, Park had wondered if maybe there was something wrong with him. He'd even wondered, seriously, while he was kissing her, he'd wondered this, whether he might be gay. Except he didn't feel like kissing any guys either. And if he thought about She-Hulk or Storm instead of this girl, Dawn, the kissing got a lot better. Maybe I'm not attracted to real girls, he'd thought at the time. Maybe I'm some sort of perverted cartoon sexual. Or maybe, he thought now, he just didn't recognize all those other girls, the way a computer drive will spit out a disk if it doesn't recognize the formatting. When he touched Eleanor's hand, he recognized her. He knew.
Eleanor. Disintegrated. Like something had gone wrong beaming her onto the Starship Enterprise. If you've ever wondered what that feels like, it's a lot like melting, but more violent. Even in a million different pieces, Eleanor could still feel Park holding her hand, could still feel his thumb exploring her palm. She sat completely still because she didn't have any other option. She tried to remember what kind of animals paralyzed their prey before they ate them. Maybe Park had paralyzed her with his ninja magic, his Vulcan handhold, and now he was going to eat her. That would be awesome.
Park. They broke apart when the bus stopped. A flood of reality rushed through Park, and he looked around nervously to see if anyone had been watching them. Then he looked nervously at Eleanor to see if she'd noticed him looking. She was still staring at the floor, even as she picked up her books and stood in the aisle. If someone had been watching, what would they have seen? Park couldn't imagine what his face had looked like when he touched Eleanor. Like somebody taking the first drink in a Diet Pepsi commercial. Over-the-top bliss. He stood behind her in the aisle. She was just about his height. Her hair was pulled up, and her neck was flushed and splotchy. He resisted the urge to lay his cheek against it. He walked with her all the way to her locker and leaned against the wall as she opened it. She didn't say anything, just shifted some books onto the shelf and took down a few others. As the buzz of touching her faded, he was starting to realize that Eleanor hadn't actually done anything to touch him back. She hadn't bent her fingers around his. She hadn't even looked at him. She still hadn't looked at him. Jesus. He knocked gently on her locker door. Hey, he said. She shut the door. Hey, what? Okay, he asked. She nodded. I'll see you in English, he asked. She nodded and walked away. Jesus.
Eleanor. All through first and second and third hour, Eleanor rubbed her palm. Nothing happened. How could it be possible that there were that many nerve endings all in one place? And were they always there? Or did they just flip on whenever they felt like it? Because if they were always there, how did she manage to turn doorknobs without fainting? Maybe this was why so many people said it felt better to drive a stick shift.
Park.
Jesus, was it possible to rape somebody's hand?
Eleanor wouldn't look at Park during English and history. He went to her locker after school, but she wasn't there. When he got on the bus, she was already sitting in their seat, but sitting in his spot, against the wall. He was too embarrassed to say anything. He sat down next to her and let his hands hang between his knees. Which meant she really had to reach for his wrist, to pull his hand into hers. She wrapped her fingers around his and touched his palm with her thumb. Her fingers were trembling. Park shifted in his seat and turned his back to the aisle. Okay, she whispered. He nodded, taking a deep breath. They both stared down at their hands. Jesus.
Chapter 16. Eleanor. Saturdays were the worst. On Sundays, Eleanor could think all day about how close it was to Monday, but Saturdays were 10 years long. She'd already finished her homework. Some creep had written, "Do I make you wet?" on her geography book, so she spent a really long time covering it up with a black ink pen. She tried to turn it into some kind of flower. She watched cartoons with the little kids until golf came on, then played double solitaire with Maisie until they were both bored stupid. Later, she'd listen to music. She'd saved the last two batteries Park had given her so that she could listen to her tape player today, when she missed him most. She had 5 tapes from him now, which meant if her batteries lasted, she had 450 minutes to spend with Park in her head, holding his hand. Maybe it was stupid, but that's what she did with him, even in her fantasies, even where anything was possible. As far as Eleanor was concerned, that just showed how wonderful it was to hold Park's hand. Besides, they didn't just hold hands. Park touched her hands like they were something rare and precious, like her fingers were intimately connected to the rest of her body, which, of course, they were. It was hard to explain. He made her feel like more than the sum of her parts. The only bad thing about their new bus routine was that it had seriously cut back on their conversations. She could hardly look at Park when he was touching her, and Park seemed to have a hard time finishing his sentences, which meant he liked her. Ha! Yesterday, on the way home from school, their bus had to take a 15-minute detour because of a busted sewer pipe. Steve had started cussing about how he needed to get to his new job at the gas station, and Park had said, "Wow." "What?" Eleanor sat by the wall now, because it made her feel safer, less exposed. She could almost pretend that they had the bus to themselves. "I can actually burst sewers with my mind," Park said. "That's a very limited mutation," she said. "What do they call you?" "They call me, And then he'd started laughing and pulled at one of her curls. That was a new, awesome development, the hair touching. Sometimes he'd come up behind her after school and tug at her ponytail or tap the top of her bun. "I don't know what they call me," he said. "Maybe the public works," she said, laying her hand on top of his, finger to finger. Her fingertips came to his last knuckle. It might be the only part of her that was smaller than him. "You're like a little girl," he said.
What do you mean? Your hands. They just look... He took her hand in both of his. I don't know. Vulnerable. Pipe Master, she whispered. What? That's your superhero name. No, wait. The Piper. Like, time to pay the Piper. He laughed and pulled at another curl. That was the most talking they'd done in 2 weeks. She'd started to write him a letter. She'd started it a million times. But that seemed like such a seventh grade thing to do. What could she write? Dear Park, I like you. You have really cute hair. He did have really cute hair. Really, really. Short in the back, but kind of long and fanned out in the front. It was completely straight and almost completely black, which on Park seemed like a lifestyle choice. He always wore black, practically head to toe, black punk rock t-shirts over black thermal long-sleeved shirts, black sneakers, blue jeans. Almost all black, almost every day. He did have one white t-shirt, but it said Black Flag on the front in big black letters. Whenever Eleanor wore black, her mom said that she looked like she was going to a funeral, in a coffin. Anyway, her mom used to say stuff like that, back when she occasionally noticed what Eleanor was wearing. Eleanor had taken all the safety pins from her mom's sewing kit and used them to pin scraps of silk and velvet over the holes in her jeans, and her mom hadn't even mentioned it. Park looked good in black. It made him look like he was drawn in charcoal. Thick, arched black eyebrows, short black lashes, high, shining cheeks. Dear Park, I like you so much. You have really beautiful cheeks. The only thing she didn't like to think about Park, was what he could possibly see in her.
Park. The pickup kept dying. Park's dad wasn't saying anything, but Park knew he was getting pissed. Try again, his dad said. Just listen to the engine, then shift. That was an oversimplification if Park had ever heard one. Listen to the engine, depress the clutch, shift, gas, release, steer, check your mirrors, signal your turn, look twice for motorcycles. The crappy part was that he was pretty sure he could do it if his dad wasn't sitting there, fuming. Park could see himself doing it in his head just fine. It was like this at Taekwondo sometimes, too. Park could never master something new if his dad was the one teaching it. Clutch, shift, gas. The pickup died. You're thinking too much, his dad snapped, which is what his dad always said. When Park was a kid, he tried to argue with him. I can't help but think, Park would say during Taekwondo. I can't turn off my brain. If you fight like that, somebody's going to turn it off for you. Clutch, shift, grind. Start it again. Now don't think, just shift. I said don't think. The truck died again. Park put his hands at 10 and 2 and laid his head on the steering wheel, bracing himself. His dad was radiating frustration. God damn, Park! I don't know what to do with you. We've been working on this for a year. I taught your brother to drive in 2 weeks. If his mom were here, she would have called foul at this. You don't do that, she'd say. Two boys, different. And his dad would grit his teeth. I guess Josh doesn't have any trouble not thinking, Park said. Call your brother stupid all you want, his dad said. He can drive a manual transmission. But I'm only ever going to get to drive the Impala, Park muttered into the dash. And it's an automatic. That isn't the point, his dad half shouted. If Park's mom were here, she would have said, Hey, mister, I don't think so. You go outside and yell at Sky, you so angry. What did it say about Park that he wished his mom would follow him around defending him? That he was a pussy. That's what his dad thought. It's probably what he was thinking now. He was probably being so quiet because he was trying not to say it out loud. Try it again, his dad said. No, I'm done.
You're done when I say you're done.
No, Park said. I'm done now.
Well, I'm not driving us home. Try it again.
Park started the truck. It died.
His dad slammed his giant hand against the glove box.
Park opened the truck door and jumped to the ground. His dad shouted his name, but Park kept walking. They were only a couple miles from home. If his dad drove by him on the way home, Park didn't notice. When he got back to his neighborhood, at dusk, Park turned down Eleanor Street instead of his own. There were two little reddish-blonde kids playing in her yard, even though it was kind of cold. He couldn't see into the house. Maybe if he stood here long enough, she'd look out the window. Park just wanted to see her face. Her big brown eyes, her full pink lips. Her mouth kind of looked like the Joker's, depending on who was drawing him. Really wide and curvy. Not psychotic, obviously. Park should never tell her this. It definitely didn't sound like a compliment. Eleanor didn't look out the window, but the kids were staring at him, so Park walked home. Saturdays were the worst.
Chapter 17. Eleanor. Mondays were the best. Today, when she got on the bus, Park actually smiled at her. Like smiled at her the whole time she was walking down the aisle. Eleanor couldn't bring herself to smile directly back at him, not in front of everybody. But she couldn't help but smile, so she smiled at the floor and looked up every few seconds to see whether he was still looking at her. He was. Tina was looking at her too, but Eleanor ignored her. Park stood up when she got to their row, and as soon as she sat down, he took her hand and kissed it. It happened so fast, she didn't have time to die of ecstasy or embarrassment. She let her face fall for just a few seconds against his shoulder, against the sleeve of his black trench coat. He squeezed her hand tight. "I missed you," he whispered. She felt tears in her eyes and turned to the window. They didn't say anything more all the way to school. Park walked with Eleanor to her locker, and they both stood there quietly, leaning against the wall, almost until the bell rang. The hall was practically empty. Then Park reached up and wrapped one of her red curls around his honey finger. "Back to missing you," he said, letting it go. She was late to homeroom and didn't hear Mr. Sarpy tell her that she had an office pass. He slammed it on her desk. "Eleanor, wake up! You've got a pass from your counselor." God, he was a jerk. She was glad she didn't have him for a real class. As she walked to the office, she trailed her fingertips along the brick wall and hummed a song Park had given her. She was so blissed out she even smiled at Mrs. Dunn when she got to her office. "Eleanor," she said, hugging her. Mrs. Dunn was big on hugging. She'd hugged Eleanor the very first time they met. "How are you?"
"I'm good."
"You look good," Mrs. Dunn said. Eleanor looked down at her sweater. A very fat man had probably bought it to wear golfing in 1968. And at her holy jeans. God, how bad did she usually look?
"Thanks, I guess."
"I've been talking to your teachers," Mrs. Dunn said. "Did you know you're getting A's in almost all your classes?" Eleanor shrugged. She didn't have cable or a phone, and she felt like she was living underground in her own house. There was plenty of time for homework.
"Well, you are," Mrs. Dunn said. "And I'm so proud of you."
Eleanor was glad there was a desk between them now. Mrs. Dunn looked like she had another hug coming on. "But that's not why I called you down here. The reason you're here is because I got a telephone call for you this morning before school started. A man called. He said that he was your dad, and that he was calling here because he didn't have your home number."
"I don't actually have a home number," Eleanor said.
"Ah," Mrs. Dunn said. "I see. Would your dad know that?"
"Probably not," Eleanor said. She was surprised he even knew what school she went to.
"Would you like to call him? You could use my office."
Would she like to call him? Why would he want to call her? Maybe something horrible. Something really horrible had happened. Maybe her grandma had died. God. Sure, Eleanor said. You know, Mrs. Dunn said, you can come use my phone whenever you need to. She stood up and sat on the edge of her desk, resting her hand on Eleanor's knee. Eleanor was this close to asking for a toothbrush, but she thought that would lead to a marathon of hugging and knee rubbing. Thanks, Eleanor said instead. Okay, Mrs. Dunn said, beaming. I'll be right back then. I'll just go freshen up my lipstick. When Mrs. Dunn left, Eleanor dialed her dad's number. He answered after the third ring. Hey, Dad. It's Eleanor. Hey, baby, how are you? She thought for a second about telling him the truth. Fine, she said.
How's everybody?
Fine.
You guys never call.
There was no use telling him that they didn't have a phone, or pointing out that he never called them back when they did have a phone, or even saying that maybe he should find a way to talk to them, him being the one with a phone and a car and a life of his own. There was no use telling her dad anything. Eleanor had known that for so long she couldn't even remember figuring it out.
Hey, I've got a cool offer for you, he said. I thought maybe you could come over on Friday night.
Her dad had a voice like someone on TV, somebody who would try to sell you record compilations, disco hits of the 70s or the latest Time Life collection.
Donna wants me to go to some wedding, he said, and I told her you would probably watch Matt. Thought you might like some babysitting money.
Who's Donna?
You know, Donna. Donna, my fiancé. You guys met her the last time you were here.
That was almost a year ago. Your neighbor? Eleanor asked.
Yeah, Donna. You can come over and spend the night. Watch Matt, eat pizza, talk on the phone. It will be the easiest $10 you ever made.
And actually, the first. Okay, Eleanor said. Are you picking us up? Do you know where we live now?
I'll pick you up at school, just you this time. I don't want to give you a whole house full of kids to watch. What time do they let you out of there?
3.
Cool. I'll see you Friday at 3.
All right.
Well, all right. I love you, baby. Study hard.
Mrs. Dunn was waiting in the doorway with her arms open. Fine, Eleanor thought as she walked down the hall. Everything is fine. Everyone is fine. She kissed the back of her hand, just to see how it felt on her lips.
Park.
I'm not going to homecoming, Park said.
Of course you're not going. To the dance, Cal said. I mean, it's way too late to rent a tux anyways.
They were early to English class. Cal sat 2 seats behind him, so Park kept having to look back over his shoulder to see if Eleanor had walked in yet. You're renting a tux? Park asked.
Yeah,
Cal said. Nobody rents a tux for homecoming.
So who's going to look like the classiest guy there?
Besides, what do you know? You're not even going.
To the dance, that is. The football game, however, different story.
I don't even like football, Park said, looking back at the door.
Could you stop being the worst friend in the world for like 5 minutes?
Park looked up at the clock. Yes.
Please, Cal said. Do me this one favor. There's a whole group of cool people going, and if you go, Kim will sit with us. You're a Kim magnet.
Don't you see what a problem that is?
No.
It's like I found the perfect bait for my Kim trap. Stop saying her name like that.
Why? She's not here yet, is she?
Park glanced over his shoulder. Can't you just like a girl who likes you back?
None of them like me back, Cal said. I may as well like the one I really want. Come on, please. Come to the game on Friday, for me.
I don't know, Park said.
Wow, what's up with her? She looks like she just killed somebody for fun.
Park whipped his head around.
Eleanor.
smiling at him. She had the kind of smile you see in toothpaste commercials, where you can see practically all of somebody's teeth. She should smile like that all the time, Park thought. It made her face cross over from weird to beautiful. He wanted to make her smile like that constantly. Mr. Stessman pretended to fall against the chalkboard when he walked in.
Good God, Eleanor, stop! You're blinding me! Is that why you keep that smile locked away, because it's too powerful for mortal man?
She looked down self-consciously and flattened her smile into a smirk.
Psst, Cal said.
Kim was sitting down between them. Cal locked his fingers together like he was begging. Park sighed and nodded his head.
Eleanor. She waited for the phone call from her dad to go sour on her. Conversations with her dad were like whiplash. They didn't always hurt right away. But it didn't. Nothing could bring Eleanor down. Nothing could drive Park's words from her head. He missed her. Who knew what he missed? Her fatness, her weirdness, the fact that she couldn't talk to him like a regular person, whatever. Whatever perversion caused him to like her was his problem. But he did like her. She was sure of it. At least for now. For today, he liked her. He missed her. She was so distracted in gym class, she actually forgot not to try. They were playing basketball, and Eleanor caught the ball, colliding with one of Tina's friends, a jumpy, wiry girl named Annette. Are you trying to start something? Annette demanded, pushing forward, pushing the ball into Eleanor's chest. Are you? Come on then, let's go, come on. Eleanor took a few steps back, out of bounds, and waited for Mrs. Burt to blow the whistle. Annette stayed mad for the rest of the game, but Eleanor didn't let it get to her. That feeling she used to have when she was sitting next to Park on the bus, that feeling that she was on base, that she was safe for the moment, she could summon it now, like a force field, like she was the invisible girl. That would make Park Mr. Fantastic. Chapter 18. Eleanor. Her mom wasn't going to let her babysit. He has 4 children, her mother said. She was rolling out dough for tortillas. Did he forget that? Eleanor had stupidly told her mother about her dad's phone call in front of her brothers and sister. They'd all gotten really excited. And then Eleanor had to tell them that they weren't invited, that it was just babysitting anyway, and that Dad wasn't even going to be there. Mouse had started to cry, and Maisie got mad and stormed out. Ben asked Eleanor if she'd call Dad back to see if he could come along to help. Tell him I babysit all the time, Ben said. Your father is a piece of work, her mother said. Every time he breaks your hearts, and every time he expects me to pick up the pieces. Pick up, sweep aside, same difference in her mom's world. Eleanor didn't argue. Please let me go, she said. Why do you want to go? Her mom asked. Why do you even care about him? He's never cared about you. God, even if it was true, it still hurt to hear it that way. I don't care, Eleanor said. I just need to get out of here. I haven't been anywhere but school in 2 months. Plus, he said he'd pay me. If he has extra money sitting around, maybe he should pay his child support. Mom, it's $10. Please? Her mother sighed. Fine, I'll talk to Richie. No, God, don't talk to Richie. He'll just say no. And anyway, he can't tell me that I can't see my father. Richie is the head of this household, her mom said. Richie is the one who puts food on our table. What food? Eleanor wanted to ask. And for that matter, what table? They ate on the couch or on the floor or sitting on the back steps holding paper plates. Besides, Richie would say no just for the pleasure of saying it. It would make him feel like the king of Spain, which was probably why her mom wanted to give him the chance. Mom. Eleanor put her face in her hand and leaned against the refrigerator. Please. Oh, fine, her mother said bitterly. Fine. But if he gives you any money, you can split it with your brothers and sister. That's the least you can do. They could have it all. All Eleanor wanted was the chance to talk to Park on the phone. To be able to talk to him without every inbred hellspawn in the flats listening. The next morning on the bus, while Park ran his finger along the inside of her bracelet, Eleanor asked him for his phone number. He started laughing. "Why is that funny?" she asked. "Because," he said quietly. They said everything quietly, even though everyone else on the bus roared, even though you'd have to shout into a megaphone to be heard over all the cursing and idiocy. "I feel like you're hitting on me," he said. "Maybe I shouldn't ask for your number," she said. "You've never asked for mine." He looked up at her through his bangs. "I figured you weren't allowed to talk on the phone after that time with your stepdad." "I probably wouldn't be if I had a phone." She usually tried not to tell Park things like that, like all the things she didn't have. She waited for him to react, but he didn't. He just ran his thumb along the veins in her wrist. "Then why do you want my number?" "God," she thought, "never mind." "You don't have to give it to me." He rolled his eyes and got a pen out of his backpack, then reached over and took one of her books. "No," she whispered. "Don't. I don't want my mom to see it." He frowned at her book.
"I'd think you'd be more worried about her seeing this."
Eleanor looked down. Crap. Whoever wrote that gross thing on her geography book had written on her history book, too. "Suck me off," it said in ugly blue letters. She grabbed Park's pen and started scribbling it out.
"Why would you write that?" he asked. "Is that a song?"
"I didn't write it," she said. She could feel patches of red creep up her neck.
"Then who did?"
She gave him the meanest look she was capable of. It was hard to look at him with anything other than gooey eyes.
"I don't know," she said. "Why would anyone write that?"
"I don't know." She pulled her books against her chest and wrapped her arms around them.
"Hey," he said.
Eleanor ignored him and looked out the window. She couldn't believe she'd let him see that on her book. It was one thing to let him see her crazy life a little bit at a time. "So yeah, I have a terrible stepdad, and I don't have a phone, and sometimes when we're out of dish soap, I wash my hair with flea and tick shampoo." It was another thing to remind him that she was that girl. She may as well invite him to gym class. She might as well give him an alphabetical list of all the names they called her. A. Ass, fat. B. Bitch, redheaded. He'd probably try to ask her why she was that girl.
"Hey," he said.
She shook her head. It wouldn't do any good to tell him that she hadn't been that girl at her old school. Yeah, she'd been made fun of before. There were always mean boys. And there were always, always mean girls. But she'd had friends at her old school. She had people to eat lunch with and pass notes to. People used to pick her to be on their team in gym class just because they thought she was nice and funny.
"Eleanor," he said.
But there was no one like Park at her old school. There was no one like Park anywhere.
"What?"
she said to the window.
"How are you going to call me if you don't have my number?"
"Who said I was going to call you?" She hugged her books even closer. He leaned against her, pressing his shoulder into hers.
"Don't be mad at me," he said, sighing. "It makes me crazy."
"I'm never mad at you," she said.
"Right."
"I'm not."
"You must just be mad near me a lot."
She pushed her shoulder against his and smiled despite herself. "I'm babysitting at my dad's house Friday night," she said. "And he said I could use the phone." Park turned his face eagerly. It was painfully close to hers. She could kiss him or headbutt him before he'd ever have a chance to pull away.
"Yeah?"
he asked. Yeah.
Yeah, he said, smiling. But you won't let me write down my number?
Tell me, she said. I'll memorize it.
Let me write it down.
I'll memorize it to the tune of a song so that I don't forget. He started singing his number to the tune of 8675309, which cracked her right up.
Park. Park tried to remember the first time he saw her, because he could remember, on that day, seeing what everybody else saw. He could remember thinking that she was asking for it, that it was bad enough to have curly red hair, that it was bad enough to have a face shaped like a box of chocolates. No, he hadn't thought exactly that. He'd thought that it was bad enough to have a million freckles and chubby baby cheeks. God, she had adorable cheeks. Dimples on top of freckles, which shouldn't even be allowed, and round as crab apples. It was kind of amazing that more people didn't try to pinch her cheeks. His grandma was definitely going to pinch her when they met. But Park hadn't thought that either the first time he saw Eleanor on the bus. He remembered thinking that it was bad enough that she looked the way she did. Did she have to dress like that and act like that? Did she have to try so hard to be different? He remembered feeling embarrassed for her. And now, he felt the fight rising up in his throat whenever he thought of people making fun of her. When he thought of someone writing that ugly thing on her book, it made him feel like Bill Bixby just before he turned into the Hulk. It had been so hard on the bus to pretend that it didn't bother him. He didn't want to make anything worse for her. He'd put his hands in his pockets and pressed them into fists and held them that way all morning long. All morning long he'd wanted to punch something or kick something. Park had gym class right after lunch, and he ran so hard during drills he started to retch up his fish sandwich. Mr. Koenig, his gym teacher, made him leave class early and take a shower.
Hit the brick, Sheridan. Now! This isn't Chariots of Fucking Fire!
Park wished it was only righteous anger that he felt. He wished that he could feel defensive and protective of Eleanor without feeling everything else. Without feeling like they were making fun of him, too. There were moments, not just today, moments every day since they'd met, when Eleanor made him self-conscious, when he saw people talking and he was sure they were talking about them. Raucous moments on the bus when he was sure that everyone was laughing at them. And in those moments, Park thought about pulling back from her. Not breaking up with her. That phrase didn't even seem to apply here. Just easing away. Recovering the 6 inches between them. He'd roll the thought over in his head until the next time he saw her. In class, at her desk. On the bus, waiting for him, reading alone in the cafeteria. Whenever he saw Eleanor, he couldn't think about pulling away. He couldn't think about anything at all, except touching her, except doing whatever he could or had to make her happy.
What do you mean you're not coming tonight?
Cal said. They were in study hall, and Cal was eating a snack pack butterscotch pudding. Park tried to keep his voice down.
Something came up.
Something? Cal said, slamming his spoon into his pudding. Like, you being completely lame, is that what came up? Because that comes up a lot lately.
No. Something. Like, a girl something.
Cal leaned in.
You've got a girl something?
Park felt himself blush. Sort of, yeah. I can't really talk about it.
But we had a plan.
Cal said. You had a plan, Park said, and it was terrible.
Worst friend in the world, Cal said.
Eleanor. She was so nervous she couldn't even touch her lunch. She gave Denise her creamed turkey and Bibi her fruit cocktail. Park made her practice his phone number all the way home, and then he wrote it on her book anyway. He hid it in song titles. Forever Young. That's a 4, he said. Will you remember?
I won't have to, she said. I already know your number by heart.
And this is just a 5, he said, because I can't think of any 5 songs. And this one, Summer of 69, with this one, remember the 6, but forget the 9.
I hate that song.
God, I know. Hey, I can't think of any 2 songs.
2 of us? She said.
2 of us?
It's a Beatles song.
Oh, that's why I don't know it.
He wrote it down.
I know your number by heart, she said. I'm just afraid you're going to forget it, he said quietly. He pushed her hair out of her eyes with his pen.
I'm not going to forget it, she said. Ever. She'd probably scream out Park's number on her deathbed, or have it tattooed over her heart when he finally got sick of her. I'm good with numbers.
If you don't call me Friday night, he said, because you can't remember my number.
How about this? I'll give you my dad's number, and if I haven't called you by 9, you can call me.
That's an excellent idea, he said. Seriously.
But you can't call it any other time.
I feel like...
He started laughing and looked away. What? She asked. She elbowed him.
I feel like we have a date, he said. Is that stupid?
No, she said.
Even though we're together every day.
We're never really together, she said.
It's like we have 50 chaperones.
Hostile chaperones, Eleanor whispered.
Yeah, Park said.
He put his pen in his pocket, then took her hand and held it to his chest for a minute. It was the nicest thing she could imagine. It made her want to have his babies and give him both of her kidneys.
A date, he said.
Practically, she added.